Finance Administration and Oversight Committee is called to order. Are there additions, corrections, changes to the agenda? Without objection, the agenda is approved. Are there additions, corrections, or changes to the minutes? And without objection, with the exception of the fact that there's a typo under B, the minutes are approved. You can correct the typo. Which leads us to the information items. Let me make the short speech that I made last time. What we're doing in these information items is a budget review. The objective of a budget review with board members is to understand the budget, understand why it is the way it is, and it is not necessarily, you know, or should not be interpreted as a criticism of staff. It's us trying to dig in and understand these things. So when we're raising questions, when we're concerned about issues, it is not an adversarial issue. It is purely us trying to do the job that we're required to do under our fiduciary responsibility as board members. That having been said.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to just have an opening statement. As we've gone through this process with this committee and reviewed the budget, we've given you a lot of numbers of what the cost will be for the FY09. One of the issues that have come up that's impacted us is it has anyone who uses an automobile or the airlines or trucking industry, then the cost of fuel. The cost of diesel fuel has increased significantly in the past year, which is going to result in a revision in the request for funding for fuel, as well as electrical power has increased. And looking at the budget and talking to the financial staff and the executive staff, directed them to make other reductions within the budget to make up for that, as well as some other areas that we need to provide additional support from the standpoint of law enforcement and looking at the number of officers, which we will be bringing back to this board, and the deployment of officers and some increase in crime. I am going to amend the request to ask for additional police officers. However, we're making the reductions in other places within the budget. I just want to let you know that we are mindful of issues with all of the jurisdictions and their funding situation, as well as looking at our expenditures to make sure they're focused on what we do, and that's providing services.
Mr. General Manager, are you proposing any change in subsidy, or are you going to make a subsidy neutral or a subsidy reduction?
Well, we want to make sure this budget is as lean as possible. We're looking at every area over time to reduce it. Just because a dollar is there does not mean we should take it. So when we bring back the next proposal on the budget, you will see an adjustment in the amount of requests.
Hopefully we can help you in that process.
Oh, I'm sure.
Mr. Chairman, just going back to the fuel prices, I know that at some time we had talked about go to lock in future prices, futures on future. Can you tell us where we are? What are we currently paying per gallon of fuel?
Yes, we are doing a swap, is what we call it, where we lock in fuel prices. And given that we're almost to the end of the year, when we look at what we've been paying in the swap versus market prices, we will end up saving probably $3.5 to $4 million this year because of the swap. So it worked out very favorable. Today, I believe we're paying $2.78 for diesel in that range. When we built the budget, we were paying about 2.25, and we projected something in the vicinity of 2.60. So the increases have just gone well beyond what anybody thought they would at the time when we built the budget. We'll return to the board with authorization to do the swap into the future, although the current authorization runs through the end of this fiscal year. So we watch the market, but we haven't swapped a lot of diesel in recent months. So we will continue that process, but we can clearly see that the trends will indicate we have to increase the diesel budget.
Okay. I would think that this would be a very difficult time to do a diesel swap.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
That may be one that we may not be able to do.
Agreed. So one last. We see with the newer fleet, with the hybrid, we see less fuel usage.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but hybrid buses in themselves are more fuel efficient because you're using electric power to run the motors. And they do give you, and that's significant to us. I mean, one mile increase per gallon of diesel fuel is a large reduction in the amount of fuel that you use. I don't have those numbers in front of me of what our fleet is doing, but we hope we can get those numbers to you.
Okay. The first presentation that we have is a review of spending trends over the past couple of fiscal years. The committee had requested us to look back at kind of how the years have closed out over the last few years to see if there was any remarkable trend or instance of increased spending toward the back end of the year. Go ahead and flip through. That was what I just stated. Show us the next chart. What I've displayed on the top here is you look at all of the types of expenditures we have. So this is all accounts in the operating budget, and we're comparing first quarter spending, second quarter spending, third quarter, fourth quarter spending, and what you're seeing is a very consistent spending pattern over all the years. Last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, very consistent spending pattern by quarter, by fiscal year on all accounts. Most of our expenditures are in salaries and wages, which really are not discretionary in terms of timing. So we've now excluded the personnel costs, and we're looking at only the non-personnel costs. And sure enough, we've seen a pretty dramatic history of WMATA spending a lot more in the fourth quarter of a fiscal year than it did in the first, second, and third quarter of the fiscal year. However, what I'll note is improvement over time. 4 years ago, the spending at the end of the year was dramatically higher. Last 2 years, it's come down, and at the close of 07, fourth quarter spending on non-personnel was roughly equal to the first three quarters. Next chart, please. I want to drill it down even farther to the two type of expenses that are the most discretionary. These are the expenses that individual managers have the ability to control. And what you're looking at here, although it's difficult to see, is the last 2 months of a fiscal year versus the first month of a fiscal year. So here you can see May and June versus July. And clearly, you're seeing a pattern where in May and June, spending ramps up, and then it falls off the first month. And here it jumped up dramatically and then fell off. But looking last year, it's really been brought back under control. There's a very, very stable spending pattern that's going on. This is in the services account. Down here in the materials and supplies, you can see the same thing. Where years ago, there was this habit of Metro to spend dramatically towards the end of a fiscal year. In this last year, that pattern has completely reversed itself. Next page, please. And basically what we're saying is there's no evidence right now of any kind of year-end spending sprees that are going on, although clearly in the past that was the trend.
Any comments, questions?
Just a question, but I think those are really things good to note, but is it a reflection of a policy piece that's in place, and how do we keep it consistent?
It actually tends to be more management-driven and financial-driven. In the earlier years, if you remember, we had a history of very large year-end budget surpluses, primarily driven by revenues coming in better than what had been expected. And I suspect what was going on was just some ability to spend at year-end and let that be covered up by the revenue surpluses.
And I recognize that part, but I was wondering, were there any controls that sort of brings it to our attention, as well as controls it to make sure that it's in balance, recognizing that revenue that comes in could also contribute to it, and making sure you capture the revenue sources for that fiscal year and you don't lose them. How do you balance that?
The new control is sitting to my right.
Okay. That's good enough. At least we, and I think it's important that we might want to know that or look at that, because otherwise we'll look to you when we see something.
As you were hearing this report, as we see that we're underspending budgets, we're not going to take those dollars and just go into spending shopping spree. If there was some emergency, of course, we would deal with that. But we need to think multi-years in advance. And we're already thinking about 09, FY10, FY11. We see some issues there, and so any under expenditures, we like to put in a reserve that the board approves that.
Okay. Okay, the next presentation was a look back at the reduction in force, and I believe Chuck was going to do that one.
Yes, this is the reduction in force. When Mr. Cato got here, we had an organizational study.
Can we produce a second?
Yes.
You made an initial comment that I just want Mr. Cato, which I just want to follow up with. You said that in the FY09 budget, you're going to be asking for additional OLAs.
Yes.
And, however, that you don't see any, you're going to find the savings necessary to fund that elsewhere.
We will make reductions throughout the budget.
Do you have any detail on that at this point?
On
the number of OLAs, the cost, and where you're finding the savings necessary to cover it?
Well, first of all, the number of officers that the chief has requested, he wants to redeploy some officers, and he's requested 25 additional officers, and they will be deployed.
What percentage of increase would that be?
Let me do the math within my head very quickly, and I'm not very good within my head. 25. It's under a 10% increase. It's about a 5.5% increase in sworn officers. 6% increase in officers. We have not increased officers over the years. There was one time we increased 20, I think, a few years back for the bus system. In addition to the increase in officers, we are going to redeploy officers, and he's working on a redeployment plan to maximize the number of sworn officers out in the system.
Is that a civilianization of the functions that police officers are currently performing, or is that?
It's a combination. We're not adding non-sworn officers, but it's a combination of assignments. Looking at, for an example, and I just want to give you one example, our money trains. For an example, we have officers who ride on the trains. Well, those officers can be on the platform as the trains come by versus just being on the train. But you're still providing the security for all of our revenue collections, but you have the visibility and the presence of that officer on the platform, for an example. That's a redeployment. You really are taking care of both issues at the same time.
What's the price tag on this?
$2 million.
It was just $2.3 million, I believe, and I will look and see exactly what it is. Funds were coming out. I issued instructions to finance and the executive staff. We are going to make a reduction in our budget, and I told them we're going to give them how much, and they can decide where it's going to be. This cannot be in service, maintenance of our vehicles, or safety.
So that's to be determined.
Yes.
Okay. Picking up on Mr. Graham's question, one of the things that we used to do was control the number of positions and where those positions were. I don't think we necessarily want to go in that direction. One of the things that's very useful in being able to evaluate a budget and what's happening in a budget is to have a comparison of what's in the 08 budget in terms of positions and what organization they're in, and where we're proposing to put positions in 09, how much growth is there, where are the shifts going on. I think that's part of what Mr. Graham just asked. That information could be provided to us. That would be very helpful.
And we will provide that. We do have a breakdown of positions. I can tell you that administratively, I think it's 1 to 3 positions. All of the other positions are either supervisors in operations, drivers, mechanics, law enforcement officers. We're focusing on the core of our business of expansions. This is not the period of time we can make expansions in our administrative staff.
Speaking of positions, Mr. Woodruff, you were just talking about how many.
Yes, sir. This presentation deals with the position reduction that was implemented primarily for the 08 budget, some continuing into 09. On page 14 of the presentation and on the slide, it reflects a shift in the focus from construction into the operating and the customer service. We had the Moffitt study, which came in and looked at our support side of the house and recommended reductions. And many of those have been implemented. Next slide. 254 positions will be eliminated in 3 phases. The first large phase, the 217, was done as part of the 07-08 budget, and you see on the chart that the split between the operating fund, which was 119 full-time equivalents, 98 in capital, and you can see that we've reduced the base budget by roughly $11 million in operating, $9 million in capital, and those savings continue forward. Those are base reductions that, of course, are reflected in 9 and beyond, and then projected for 09 are further reductions, although not of a similar magnitude, and those are listed 23 positions eliminated in February, and it's anticipated 14 more would be eliminated in June.
Okay, the next agenda item is a discussion of four particular pieces of service that are currently treated as what we call reimbursable operating projects. The easiest way to think of these is they're kind of off budget. They're not really contained in Metro Matters because they're not capital, they're not part of the operating budget. These are four pieces of service, two bus and two rail, that are specifically funded by a sponsoring jurisdiction. The two rail projects are coming near to the end of an 18-month demonstration period that was enacted by the board when those projects started up. And we're using this just as an opportunity to talk not only about those, but also about two bus projects, because all four of these pieces of service fit the definition of regional service that could be funded regionally in the operating budget as opposed to being funded individually by one sponsoring jurisdiction. So the policy issue here is one of conflicting or colliding board policies. We have one set of board policies that define things regionally and say we should fund them regionally, but then we have these kind of four exceptions to that policy that say even though these are regional pieces of service, we don't want to fund them regionally. So using this 18-month ending period, we've just brought these four pieces of service together for you to make a decision about whether you want to continue to fund them individually or potentially turn the service off and not run that service anymore, or roll these four pieces of service into the regionally funded budget. And that would be staff's proposal, because by the other definitions, rail is a regionally funded system, and the two bus routes that we're talking about here meet the test of what was the regional mobility panel guidelines established years and years ago. So by normal budgeting standards, these should be treated as just plain old operating pieces of service. The next page shows you... ones that are running today.
They're running today because we said to a jurisdiction, if you want to pay for it, pay. It does not imply that we're necessarily going to do it then. And so, you know, I mean, this comes up again and again, you know, over the years. Somebody wants to try something. You say, well, why won't you let us do it? We're going to pay for it. Fair enough. That doesn't mean that we're necessarily automatically going to do it at the end of the trial because it meets the definition. One thing that seems to me to be lacking in this report forward is not anything really about the performance of any of these, actually. Not any basis for saying, okay, do we think in fact this is something we should add to the regional system? The answer may be yes, these may all be very good things, but concerned about the presumption that because it was a pilot that it was a regional system. Now it's just a funny question of how you do it, of course, it needs regional.
I agree completely, and we can certainly come back with performance measures. When each of these four pieces of service began, the board did not establish performance measures for them to meet in order for there to be continuance. For example, the two rail projects were simply turned on to be run for an 18-month demonstration period. To my knowledge, there was no criteria established at which point the board would choose to continue or not continue the service.
Precisely my point. So therefore, there's no basis for you to recommend funding on something the board is not going to do. Even without any standard, and the board be in a position to take that. But at this point, and I think this is a useful discussion to have, it's just an information item, I understand that. But we are going to have to know something about the performance of these courses that you have in this
same question concerns that Mr. Zimmerman raised, and the concern I have is that we don't get a chance to set priorities, because this simply becomes, if we all decide we would fund it, and then whoever gets in that movable pilot, then we suddenly now have to find it as a regional benefit to have this as a regional service. And I think it would be bode us well to set the priorities such that as we do these, if the decision that we would move to determine whether or not it becomes a regional service is to use a pilot, then we set some criteria so that when you get there, okay, it makes sense to do it. But I'd love to see the numbers, but I'd like to also see how it impacts other projects that would normally have moved in.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm reading this a little differently, because I didn't see this as a staff proposal or recommendation. What I saw this was staff kind of acknowledging the fact that we did have services that jurisdictions have chosen to pay for. Those services are coming to their end, acknowledging the fact that the board, in establishing these services, have never established policies or procedures or performance measures that we as a board have to make some decisions. In fact, they mentioned that you can continue to fund the service, or you could, in fact, make it part of the regional service, or you could discontinue the service. So they actually have made three options available. It does not sound to me as a recommendation, but it does call the question that I think the members have raised is, do we have a policy or procedures that we as a board have established on how we establish demonstration projects, how we determine whether or not they're ready to be rolled into the regional service, and at what point do we do that? So that is, in fact, our task and our responsibility, and it's something that we do need to do. And I think these particular four projects just brings that to our attention. That is a policy that we need to establish.
Clarify. I don't spend any of that, and I don't have a problem with it. Report itself is just information. The only reason I made what I did, I heard the words that would be staff's recommendation, not what's written, but what's said here.
I agree. I did use the word recommendation. Perhaps that's too strong a word to use. My only thought was there's a fair amount of administrative bookkeeping process work that goes on to keep track of very small things like this. To the extent these were rolled into the regional budget, some administrative work would not be required anymore.
So it's not a staff
It's not a staff recommendation.
I think it's broader than an administrative issue. If we are going to have a regional system and things are going to be defined as regionally, then we should have funding. I think what it says is, as we undertake, and this is what I think I'm hearing here, as we undertake projects of this sort, there ought to be in that initial action a statement that says what we will do when the demonstration period is over, and then not have a whole series of things where you're left up in the air 18 months later because nobody made that part of the approval. I guess one of the requests I would make is, number one is, can we have the original approvals for each one of these?
Sure.
So we can see what the board did in fact approve.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, is it the sense of the board that we should not bring anything to the board that asks for a demonstration project that doesn't also have the criteria on which it will be judged, when it will be judged, and what will happen at the end of that period?
I would say, you know, that's not an unreasonable view, not the one I was expressing. And, you know, I'm not sold one way or the other. I just want to do that. So I'm okay. The result is you probably wouldn't have some pilots. And some of the jurisdictions really wanted them and saying, look, we'll pay for it, but just a chance to show it. I have a problem. I don't have a problem with the way we've done it, as long as it's understood there's a presumption. I say we have this additional, you know, that there is going to be a presumption based on something in the beginning. It's going to be a lot harder for people that, frankly, are not my jurisdiction. But I'm willing to go either way on that, just as long as we're clear.
I agree with you, Mr. Zimmerman. I would just point out that one of the big issues was we were moving in this direction a number of years ago. Little project here, little project there, little project somewhere else. That's when we undertook the regional bus study. And one of the results of the regional bus study was to reaffirm that we have a regional rail system that should be operated regionally. And as we look ahead to various extensions, one of the things we want to make sure is those extensions are funded regionally. same is true with the services that we're looking at here, and that we should define regional bus routes, and that's how they should be funded, and non-regional bus routes should be funded as non-regional. And it was a very clear set of definitions there. So if we wish to continue in the spirit of a very carefully thought through process by a lot of members of this region, all the jurisdictions participating, we really need to deal with this issue. And I think it's probably better to either have a broad policy that we established in the beginning, or at least a set of things that we call for as each one of these gets approved initially. Mr. Graham.
Yeah, but in that process, we don't want to subject ourselves to amnesia, because the fact of the matter is that these specific projects, at least a couple of them, were operating in the context of much larger expansions, you know, to which, you know, there was acquiescence, you know, and I think everybody here knows what I'm talking about. And they were occurring in Maryland and Virginia, as well as the District of Columbia. And so, you know, to pull these out and analyze these in isolation of those greater commitments, you know, leaves something to be desired. And, you know, we'd have to have a look at a whole lot of things at this point. And I think we might also want to go back and see what was the pattern on all of this going back 10 years, you know, as opposed to just 1 year. And so, you know, I don't think we can view these specific relatively small matters, you know, in isolation of all of what this board has agreed to do in terms of very much larger issues that were considered at about the same time. The status of which right now we probably need a report on anyway. The other thing, this is as good a point as any for me to indicate that the mayor of the District of Columbia has asked me to ask this board to reconsider a decision that was made on the commitment of the rental fees which are being collected on the parking at the National Ballpark, at the new ballpark stadium. And so at the next meeting of this committee, we'd like to have that matter back on the agenda so that we can discuss how those revenues will be committed and to what. Because, quite frankly, I wasn't at the meeting that decision was made. I don't know whether Mr. Monome was here, Mr. Jay Paul. I don't know whether you were here. You were here, but we would like, on behalf of the District of Columbia, we'd like that place on the agenda for the next
one. Mr. Graham, that would require that people who voted for it, or against it in this particular case, that the majority side would move for it to be put back on the agenda, because you don't consider without that. So, there's anybody.
Well, we could have an agenda item to discuss it.
As long as it was no vote. Formal, right. As long as it was no vote, you have an information item on it. But I don't see any point in having an information item unless there's some desire on the part of the people who voted one way to change their votes. As I remember, it was a pretty lopsided vote. One vote that was in favor of doing it.
Did that come before the board?
At that point, yes, it did come before the board.
The board has acted on it.
The board has acted on it.
So this matter then would be more properly raised before the board decided.
And again, it would have to be done in the same context. Mr. Simmer.
Whenever you're ready to get back to the presentation.
Yep.
Let me just ask, but can we get the information on what this is by the board? What the board made action?
Is that the last board meeting?
The board meeting was approved. Okay.
Just a question on these. Are these four projects the only ones that fall into this category?
Yes, sir.
So there are no other demonstration projects out there?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
That's really all I had on this particular presentation. The next item on the agenda is... I'm sorry.
Okay. Just signaling an unwillingness to incorporate.
Okay.
Just signaling an unwillingness to have
Sure.
Well, and the pilot is a commitment by the regional chair.
Let's hold off on that at the moment. We've asked for performance information. We've asked for the actual approvals. Mm-hmm. And why don't we bring those back next time and go through that and see what we want to do there.
Okay.
I think the board really responsibly has got to decide how it's going to treat these in the future. So don't put staff in this kind of situation.
That would be a fair thing. I'm not drawing that conclusion. I don't think there's anything wrong here until the point where somebody said there was a recommendation based on that. And I was really concerned because people sitting in these chairs now weren't necessarily in their jobs at the time we did. They don't necessarily know exactly. I'm interested in seeing ultimate more information about each of them. Like, I'm interested in these bus routes, how they're doing, how they would, it'd be great. The whole idea with them, in fact, was to learn from them.
I would note if you just look at the data provided already, the Georgia Avenue Rapid Bus has got a 50% bus recovery, which is way above any other route we've got. And
by the way, again, it may be wonderful by lots of measures. I suspect it is, and I'm great. Bus recovery is the one statistic I'm interested in. That's the biggest problem with Transit America is the cost recovery on bus routes. Absolutely nothing. Cost recovery in the elevator out there. Have the building without the elevator. At any rate, I am interested in seeing how it's doing relative ridership or that kind of thing. And the whole point is, they want to be moving this direction. We talk about moving this direction. So it's important to learn. But that's more than just a funding decision. Yellow Line extension, I have some current extension only operates off peak. I would like to know if they're operating. It's operationally impossible to do this, not just off.
It's a rail car.
I'm not looking for an answer. I would like to know if it's a good idea to do. It's worth looking at. One of the things that I don't like about it now is you have to figure out when you get that train and when you can't get that train, and that's a complication. And I found in my own experience that it was very hard to find out from a lot of when I could take it. And I couldn't figure it out online, couldn't get it from the ride guy, and calling the people on the end. No. And they didn't even understand the fact that the Yellow Line runs from U Street only at certain times and not at other times. They didn't get it. So, I wasn't going to know the detail on it, but that was a complication from the communications issue, that's another thing. But if we could run it, all the time. Yeah, it's a good idea to do. It's a good idea to do all the time. Now, maybe it's costly, maybe it's operationally infeasible, but I want to know before we actually make a regional decision.
So, I have a request for information, Mr. Hunt.
I'm glad that Mr. Zimmerman provided some clarification on his intent, this too, because I wanted to make sure that people didn't misunderstand mine. And it was not in any way suggesting that turn back the clock or that we bring up all these issues and we have all these reviews. It was more in terms of going forward, how we decide as a board we want to deal with this so that we don't put staff in a position. And we have our own problems when these things come back. So it was more prospectively how we would approach this process. So I just want to make sure that I clarify my intentions.
And I think that would be useful because looking forward, it would be useful because I know the District of Columbia is seriously considering funding a new rapid bus for 16th Street. And again, on a pilot. And I think it does. It's just a matter of rational decision making. It makes sense to figure these issues out and approve the project. And then also for the District of Columbia, if it's apparent that there are issues insurmountable in terms of other jurisdictions, then we may wish to just operate it within our jurisdiction, in which case, we would have all the stops within the District of Columbia. And I don't know whether that makes sense. And so in the case of the rapid bus on Georgia Avenue, it originates in Silver Spring, if I'm not mistaken. And yet the District of Columbia has been paid for. And so, it's a... All of this needs to be considered as we look at how we're going to, spend our scarce subsidy dollars and additional service dollars from BC's point of view. And we have these issues before us at the council right now. Mr. Lynn?
Stop. I'm trying to stop, Mr. Graham, but you can't edge me on. But I obviously we're talking about looking at a 100-mile regional bus system, and it was actually the intent of what I wanted to do when we started the bus conference a year ago. But in that framework, Mr. Graham, I think we in Maryland are also interested in looking at how our ends of systems interact with yours, so that if we can make those type of improvements, that we can have it become a connected service. I mean, that's what we're talking about actually is, you know, my vision I think is very similar to Mr. Zimmerman's, is that we could have a purple line, or I better get another color. We can have a pink line that can go all the way from Georgia Avenue through Montgomery County all the way down into the district, and that line would actually could be identified to travelers, so that they know they could have a rapid bus line that could complement our rail system and create some additional high usage on our bus service. So, you know, we could actually have virtual service across the region. That was part of my vision as well. So that's very much in sync with your discussion.
And so, too, we could extend the yellow line beyond Fort Dodge if, you know.
I'm going to stop, Mr. Graham. Just keep trying to finish.
We get into too much operational planning.
Okay. The next item is one of those things that could be littered with acronyms, but I'm going to try and speak in English. There is an organization out there called the Government Accounting Standards Board that accountants like to call GASB that has established a new set of rules that organizations like ours must follow. And the rules go to how we account for basically retiree health here at WMATA. It's really all other post-employment benefits, but for us the lion's share of that is tied up in health insurance for retirees. Current FY09 proposed budget includes $5 million of assumed funding to begin setting aside money in a trust that could be used to pay part of the future cost for this. We set the presentation up in kind of a question and answer process. I'll spare you reading all the Q's and A's. They're pretty straightforward, just trying to decompile what all the actuaries and auditors and everybody else have said. The two primary issues are one of bond rating and future expense for insurance. Here at WMATA, the issue about the bond rating is probably not a significant concern. As a matter of fact, most of the people we've talked to said it probably doesn't impact WMATA one way or the other. It impacts the jurisdictions in a dramatic fashion, because to the extent the jurisdictions choose to not pre-fund this benefit, it could significantly deteriorate existing bond ratings. So on that basis, as far as I know, all of the local jurisdictions and all the states have made the decision in this area to go ahead and set funding aside for this benefit. Here at WMATA, I think the chief budgetary issue can be seen on page 37 of the presentation. There's a line chart that really shows what's going to happen with our operating expense if we choose to either pre-fund the benefit or not, and it's really a pay-as-you-go or move over to the accrual basis of budgeting for this. The red line is what we do today. It's what we've always done in the past. Until this rule change happens, we've accounted for these benefits on a pay-as-you-go basis. So as we send money to a health insurance company, we record the cost. And the growth in that red line is basically the inflationary cost of health insurance going up over time. What the blue line would indicate is we would not only budget for the red line, but budget an additional amount each year to be set aside in an investment trust. Those assets would grow over time, and current stock market conditions aside, hopefully generate a return that would then be used to cover some of the operating costs. So you see a flip in what happens in the future. It didn't show up on the screen, but you can see it on the page. It's about 7 or 8, 9 years out into the future. The budgetary contributions, while going up, would suddenly reverse and begin coming down. And from purely a budgetary standpoint, we'd now be able to pay for this benefit using operating budget contributions and investment assets. It's really identical to the way the pension plans are funded today, and it kind of goes back to the decision made 30-some years ago by the board at that time to go ahead and fund those pension benefits. So there is no requirement in the accounting procedures that you do set aside this funding. It truly is a WMATA budgeting question, and as I stated at the beginning, the budget has made the assumption that you would choose to pre-fund this benefit to take advantage of the long-term budgetary savings that would happen as that trust built up assets.
Any questions?
How does this fit within our other priorities for this year? It seems to me this is a timing question. And it's when do we choose to fund this obligation or this responsibility? And it seems to me that that has to be lined up with our other challenges for this current time. Maybe actually deferring something else by choosing to do this now. So I don't know how it fits in terms of our other priorities. Whether we, I mean, I think I can see some long-term advantages in terms of reduced costs in the out years, but there are those initial major allotments that we have to make now, and what are we deferring from immediate needs now by doing that? So I don't know how your budget works out in terms of doing that, but it's something that we'd be interested in seeing.
Mr. Sullivan,
and that other side of that is. This is something we've noticed from peers. Regulation coming out of anonymous accounts in Connecticut who rule our lives and never imagined. He decided to change the rules on
absolutely right. You're trading out today's dollars, and it's a balancing act. Could we use the $5 million elsewhere? Yes. There have been many questions about cameras, buses, cameras outside of the rail station. Absolutely, we could use those dollars, but I see us having a dual responsibility of looking at today's budget, of looking at the long-term impacts to this organization 5, 10, 15, 20 years out. There is no requirement whatsoever that we do that, these monies aside this year. But at some point in time, we do not set it aside as like saving for a college education for our children. That day will arrive. You have to pay that bill. And if you're not set it aside, then you're either going to have to borrow it or do something else to do it again.
The reserve. Okay. So it's relevant to ask whether dollars a day, that's from the bank account,
yes, that's
the better, whether it's a safety improvement that might take another one. Again, what is compelling you to do it? We're explicit about this. You are a triple bond rated entity issuing debt. And the folks on Wall Street are saying, no. You're up there at AAA, the state of AAA, you got to be right up at the edge of what everybody's doing. You got to be ahead of folks. You can't wait for the rest of them. And you have a different consideration, but it's a slight change in moderating the standard. Mountains in Connecticut have a real big impact on what will be your bottom line today. On the other hand, if you're not up there, you're not
Mr. Cato, I'm with my two colleagues here because I'm trying to figure out. I think this is a good idea. I recognize that it will save us a tremendous amount of money in the long run, but it's coming to us now, and it seems like it's in a hurry, even though you just now said that we don't have to do this right now, but it's like the college tuition that will become due and payable soon, you know, ultimately. So I guess I'm trying to figure out what's precipitating it right at this moment.
The rules of accounting will require the board to make the decision to pre-fund or not by June 30th.
No, it doesn't. Rules of accounting require us to show it as a liability. Funding or pre or not funding is something we can decide now or next year or the year after or the year after that.
There's one slight difference in that the discount rate that we will be using to calculate the annual expense changes based on whether the decision is to pre-fund or not pre-fund. If you choose to stay on a pay-as-you-go basis, we only have a very small discount rate allowable under the regulations because there's no stock market gains to be made. If you pre-fund, we can discount at a much higher rate, and the annual expenditures will be lower.
As a bookkeeping, doesn't affect our operations on any given day. Mr. Gene Cole.
Yeah, I want to just comment. I generally support the concept, but I have a couple questions, a clarification on page 36. Under the question and then the answer, the second bullet says, but the annual payout to retirees from that trust is $100 million. So we actually pay $100 million now?
The
retirement annually?
The pension trust funds pay that amount of money. WMATA's annual expense is much lower than that. WMATA, in its budget, spends $20
million. All right.
$80 million comes from 30-plus years of accumulated stock market investments.
Okay. It just struck me as a very high number, generally.
That is exactly how the pension funds work. And if you chose to refund this...
Second question relates to... You know, we had a tight budget. What are we not doing in the budget that we're taking this $5 million from?
Well, as I mentioned, there are many things that we could do with money.
But what specifically were we taking it from?
I was going to say, it's not something we've taken it from because it didn't exist in prior budgets. So this $5
million. No, but you're saying you're taking an additional $5 million and applying it to...
Well, that might misspoke. We did not... look at the budget and say we need to reduce it by $5 million in order to make up this $5 million. This was the $5 million on top of what we felt we needed to operate this year. And I think I just laid out, we have $5 million more, there's many things you can spend it on, there's no question about that.
If you're thinking about increased subsidies to cover this $5 million, I think you need to think about something.
That's a pretty clear statement.
And that's the district Columbia is not going to increase subsidies.
There is a lack of clarity as to the larger ongoing benefit, I guess, what I'm concerned about. I understand clearly the benefit of making the investment and hopefully being able to have that investment grow and utilizing the fund in the same way as we have to do the other trust funds. I guess I had a misunderstanding in terms of the timing as well as the impact of not having made that leveled that liability for us. And so what I heard a discussion between you and Mr. Benjamin, and I guess it was a discussion. I'd like to know what the real answer is, that it does not affect the discount rate, or it does.
What discount rate has no effect on our ability to issue bonds or our operations.
And does it have any effect on not issuing it, but what the returns may be? What would be available for us in terms of
returns?
On the use of how we would be rated on how.
I think you heard the statement from staff that this has no effect whatsoever, really. Bond ratings.
Correct.
It won't affect our interest rates or anything else. Where it really has an effect is in that one chart that staff put in front of us that says, do we wish to fund now or do we wish to pay later?
And
that's anything we can decide to fund at a greater rate at a later date or a greater rate today or anything else. That's the real issue before us, and we because I would broaden that slightly and say it's something Mr. Linton pointed out to me as an issue a couple days ago. Look at the bottom of page 35. What we have there is a list of a bunch of different areas where we have liabilities. We've been very inconsistent as to what we fund and what we don't fund. And if you use the argument, you pay now or you pay later, the question is, should we be funding more of these, and if so, how? And in fact, one of those comes up to us in a little while on the issue of what we should be doing on third-party claims.
So, any other comments?
Did I answer your question? No, you were asking me if I answered it.
So do we need to explore having a uniform policy?
Well, I guess that's the question.
Do we need to have a policy?
Or do we want to treat each of these individually?
Absolutely.
Can I require you to do?
Yeah.
Buy a bus?
Right, you know, if you're actually getting something, then you drive the old bus. How to make outside people confident that you will be able to pay the bill. So, you know, with a private company, it's real obvious why that's the way the company becomes bankrupt. It doesn't pay its bills. The government becomes secure. Typically, the government is going to be obliged to pay no matter what because there's a sovereign power to tax. Of course, there are some governments who have the ability to do their bankruptcy, but many do not. This is a compact nation. So, again, you have to do it because government can't extend its tort on the makes you do it, then you have to do it. You don't, the writers don't get anything, taxpayers don't get anything. You do what you're required to do. Every dollar that goes in extra that isn't actually doing anything is money taken from our writers and our taxpayers. Not providing the services. So I say we follow the law, we follow the rules we have to, but we do it exactly as we have to, not for us that are actually providing.
As what my colleague will hardly be, I wasn't necessarily looking for a uniform approach, but I did look at the fact that I think that I'm much more interested in what is our priority to our customers than I see in contact very often. By statutes and laws and regulations. Outside of that, lobby my
I would say that listening to the sense of this committee, you may have found a way to start funding.
Okay.
Move on to the next item.
The next item is responding to questions that were raised by the committee on the March 13th meeting. And before jumping into that, I would point out that the 09 budget, to a large extent, of course, is based on the prior year budgets, primarily the 08 budget. But at the time we built 09, we didn't have the experience we have today. And a little bit later in this committee meeting, Mr. Harcum will go through the 08 budget, but to steal his highlights, basically, the revenues are exactly on budget. The percentage shows zero variation, and the expenditure side is under budget by 1%, and it's primarily in the category of services. The big account, salary, wages, and overtime, is within 1% of budget. And I simply say that to point out that as we get more experience in 08, it tends to validate that the 09 numbers look very accurate. Going through the first chart, the first question was, explain the increase in labor. It's a $44 million increase. And you see the...
Back up one chart for a second.
Yes, sir.
That number five that's on there, I think is not the question that was asked. The question that was asked was, how much did inventory, including bench stock, grow? I understand those two are now integrated, as opposed to how much was written off. Because one of the things that happens is if you end up spending a lot of money growing your inventory, you now have money locked up in inventory and not available for other purposes. So the question that's there and the answer that's given are not the one that was asked.
Go ahead with number one.
Yes, on number one, again, the increase, the $44 million increase in the labor expense. And as we go down through, there's $5 million set aside for non-union pay increases. That's approximately 1,660 FTEs, full-time equivalents. $25 million set aside for the various union contracts, which are in negotiation now. That's about 85% of the workforce. There's $11 million for staffing for bus and rail service improvements. There is an increase in overtime, and then has been discussed earlier, there's consideration being given to adding, I'm just dropping down, to the police staffing to be funded out of the police overtime. So that account is under review. The $4 million essentially reflects increases. If you give pay increases, then obviously overtime costs more. So it's basically a level budget in the overtime account. And we have also increased the savings recognized in the vacancy account from 3% to 5%. And the very last item, we have indirect cost allocation that remains at 6% and has a value of $4 million.
I may ask a question about the very first of those on union pay adjustments, which is some salaries.
Yeah, it's the non-reps.
It goes from 179 to 198 million between 08 and 09. That's an 11% increase, which is not entirely consistent with the 2% or 3% number that you've got there.
The difference would be staffing changes, part of the 11 million. To the extent we had bus street supervisors, they're salaried employees, and they'll cause the salary line to go up.
So that would reinforce the request that we made earlier, which is what are you doing in terms of additional positions? I would just note that as I went through this, notice that IT was a 48% increase all by itself.
Part of that is also a reorganization. There was a shift to the communications group, which used to be in the Department of Operations, which had a significant staffing complement that's now considered IT. So when you just look at IT year over year, you're seeing a combination of both budgetary increases and reorganization impact.
So it's not an equivalent one for one. What would be useful? What we're losing in this is what's happening in terms of reorganizations and staffing. Really see what's going on in these numbers, because they're growing at a rather alarming rate. Let's look at the numbers.
So we need to actually go bring back additional breakdown of it.
The challenge that I have is balancing bringing you information that's meaningful versus overloading you. I mean, we were talking yesterday with some jurisdictional staff. I can bring you position information. This is what this is, all 11,000 of us, one position at a time. But I think
we've had position charts in the past that just say, here's a department, and this is what it was last year, and this is what it is this year. It shows that there have been reorganizations, how those shifts. So well, I think that's really what we're looking for. Mr. Lund.
Let me just say, in defense of staff, that we have been, I wouldn't say all over the board, but we have actually been in different places in terms of level of detail of information that we want. And, you know, there are times when we have said that we got too much information, and therefore we have suggested that they streamline the proposals. So, you know, and some of the adjustments in the information is done as a result of that. And then we come back, you know, 2 years later and say we don't have enough information. And then we said that the information we had before was detail and sufficient. Why did we change? Well, very often we've changed because we've asked for the change. So, you know, I just want to make sure. But I've been here and I've seen, you know, budget chairs go from one to the other, back and forth, and then come back and make the same statement that you just made. So I just want to make sure that we're clear about sometimes we do this to ourselves.
No question about it. And I also want to clarify that in asking for this kind of information, we're not asking for control. We don't want to pass a budget that says this is how many positions you should have, which did in the past and don't now. But if you're looking at the budget and you're trying to figure out why numbers suddenly make enormous changes, which is something we as a board we should be doing, it appears that the big thing that may be driving it may be positions. We need to know what those increases are.
We will bring back, as we said, the breakdown of positions by departments and But there are a lot of complexities. There's been a great deal of reorganization in this agency over the last year. A lot of the shifts are because of that. But whatever degree of detail this board wants, we'll bring it to you. But some of the changes were just, from my perspective, we had to shift in order to better manage this organization. But again, we do what this board directs us to do.
Just for clarity, I can bring back staffing charts that relate to the 09 budget. I will find it very difficult to do an 08 to 09 staffing comparison because of system difficulties.
Whatever extent you can do it, I understand you have IT problems. Whatever extent you can do it, it would be helpful to know why some of these numbers rise as much as they do. What you're saying is you're moving people from one place to another. And that's fine as long as we can see that. One of the things you may want to do is work with our staffs to work it out with them so that you minimize the degree to which we have those discussions here.
Information item, we have it.
We have it, and then we will include in the next information
item. It's just another example of the balancing act. I'm trying not to bring things like departmental reviews in front of the committee, which committee did not specifically ask for. But
I don't think we want
it. This is quite on point. Not enough that we've signed that too much.
Okay. Let me just follow on. I do think that's an important point, and let me first note that I have enormous respect for Ms. Peck and all of the things that she is trying to do and the problem that she finds herself with. I did also notice that when you get up to page 30, or 52, you have a doubling of IT consulting services. You have an enormous increase there. I believe have in our immediate needs and capital about 30 or 35 million of IT. So there are a number of those issues that seems to be an area that recurs through various parts of this budget.
I'm sorry, I do need to point out that on that 2 million IT consulting services, I neglected to put a parenthetical comment that is offset by a decrease in another category of expense. So what you're seeing, again, we're looking at just the services category, and you're seeing some increases because of effectively reorganizations. Things that used to be leases, things that used to be utilities have now been recategorized as services because it's an IT type of function. So it's very difficult to just focus in on one narrow set of expenditures and isolate what's happening from just a raw budgetary increase versus what's been going on with reorganizations.
I did have the same reaction that Mr. Zimmerman did. Maybe it's all the reorganization. But it's like the IT shows up again and again with very large.
They're a very good example. I'm happy to bring that back so we can use IT as a kind of a departmental review of how that occurs.
So, on a broader basis, I'm still not quite sure why salaries went up 11%. You're saying it's snapping, and you're going to show us the snapping numbers that caused that.
I can. Yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Sorry.
I just want to add that Ms. Peck did bring to us a fairly comprehensive presentation on the challenges within the IT, the proposals, and some prospective idea of what staffing would look like. So we did get a little drill down, I recall, in a meeting that we had that did lay out an overall plan based on where we were as is and in a to-be state. And a process moving forth to that. So I would just wanted to mention that.
No doubt that we've gotten a lot of information.
it's indicated the overall spending is decreasing as a percent of the total pay, which indicates to improving efficiency. Certainly scheduled overtime is beneficial. To give an example, the average bus driver run pay is 8.3 hours, and that's an example of scheduled overtime. Each time you add a new position, there's a cost to the authority of approximately $10,000 for health costs. So there's a balancing act between scheduled overtime being efficient versus the unscheduled overtime and when you look to add additional staff. As indicated here, the unscheduled overtime covers special events, police situations, vacancy training, etc. And again, on the right, the chart shows while overtime in total spending is moving along somewhat, consistency as a percent of the total expenditures in compensation is coming down. And on this chart you see historically we were spending in the overtime account $70, $80, $82 million. There was a significant cut in the 08 budget, and as I mentioned earlier, the overall compensation accounts in the 08 budget are running on budget. The slight increase in 09 again is based on projected base pay adjustments.
Just a question as to how you put the numbers in the actual budget. The numbers that we see there for overtime, are those non-scheduled, unscheduled overtime?
That's all category of overtime that's in the operating budget.
All categories of overtime. So
salaried, scheduled, and non-op overtime is all right there.
Okay, no, but if I go to page 91 in your budget where you've got overtime shown, how much, those lines that are there for overtime don't total to $65 million in total?
90, I'm sorry, what page?
91, which is your summary of how things break out, multi-departmental. So I presume the rest of the $65 million is somewhere in salaries and wages?
Well, there's, looking at page 91, there's $9.5 million of salary and overtime, which is primarily the police department. There's $35.8 million for the scheduled positions, which are train operators, bus operators, and station managers. And then
$35.8?
In the wages category, the third line down, there's total
overtime wages. Oh, I see. You got another
$35 for the schedule, which is a combination of scheduled and non-scheduled. And then
there's three different places.
Yeah, and then there's $19.4 for the non-op, which are mechanics and warehouse clerks and truck drivers and those people. So it's those three categories that make up the 65.
Okay.
Okay, next question had to do with what's the trend been on claims payout. There's two categories here, workers' compensation claims, third-party liability claims. You see a multi-year trend for both. And in the worker comp, a bit of a spike in the fiscal 04 year, remained high, starting a downward trend in 05, 06, and 07. On the third-party liability, that is variable, not really any trend line to be determined there. A spike in 06, coming down in 07.
Before we move on, I got a question here too.
Sure.
What we see here is, particularly if you looked at the numbers at the bottom here, that it running around 15 million, went up to mid 20s, dropped back down to about 20 in 07. This is the actuals.
Mm-hmm.
Our budget for 08 was 29 million versus an actual of 20 in 07, or a 45% increase. Our budget for 09 appears to be 43 million, which is another 48% increase. 43 million is an awful lot higher than where our draws have been. We're looking at 114% increase over 2 years.
There is a dramatic spike coming for a number of recent accidents.
It's in the third party liability in 09, that's projected to be $25 million.
By 10, it will drop back down.
And 10, it's projected to come down to 12, so it's the payout of accidents.
That's an enormous increase in what we estimate. Generally speaking, my past experience has been, estimates have always been very, very high and wrong.
the actuaries have reserved a small number of very horrific accidents at fairly significant dollar amounts.
Let's hear, if I could, on this particular issue, we can go break it down into detail, accident specific. That would be in a closed session because we're under, still negotiating some of the claims. But if last year we had a very tragic year, and those accidents occurred, and at some point we're going to have to make some type of settlement on those, and we came up with the best possible estimates that we could. I mean, we could, absolutely, it's a guesstimate, or an estimate based upon past experience. If it's lower, then we wouldn't spend it. If it's higher, then we're going to have to come back to this board to shift monies. We can, you know, we can put the number at any amount, but if it comes in higher, we have to come back and have to fund that. And those monies would have to come from some other account, because the jurisdictions would have made their decisions on how they're funding this agency. But you're right, it is significant. We will look at it again, and we will break it down into the detail, but it was a very significant year from the standpoint of events that occurred.
I don't think we as individuals want to try and second-guess specific accidents, and I don't think we need that information. I do think it might be worthwhile to take a look at past events where there have been estimates for what settlements would be, how those related to what the actual settlements were. That may not be something you want to do with us, but something you may want to do yourselves. I don't know what degree you've done that already. Tends to reduce these numbers a little bit.
Actually, in the actuarial report, they've gone to the effort of breaking out kind of trend-based claims payouts from extraordinary payouts. You can see that on a trend basis, there's a fairly steady progression of cost increases on the workers' comp. It's primarily driven by health insurance, not increasing claims. On the third-party side, there's always a routine number of fender benders and those kind of things that go on, but then you can see these dramatic spikes. That's what's going to be affecting the budget for the next 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, how much longer is this meeting
going to go on? Mr. Graham, we're doing probably the most important work.
I'm asking this for a reason.
Depends on how many questions people ask.
I mean, are we going over budget documents after this?
No. Just this agenda.
The only reason I'm asking is I'm freezing. And if this meeting is winding down, I'd be glad to not have the engineer come. But
he's coming.
He's coming because it's just too cold to be in the room anymore. So I'm not suggesting that you rush or anything. I just would like a different temperature.
It's the next question had to do with the services, the category of services, and there's a definition. Services, the cost of contracting out certain work, it includes such things as parking lots, metro access, actuaries, auditors, etc. And the real detail begins on page 51, where there's an increase in the metro access operations of $4 million. That's based on the increased ridership projected at 16%. There's no increase in the parking operation budget. Contract maintenance has increases, $5 million for IT software, that is vendor support for our major software, PeopleSoft, Maximo, Trapeze.
There's something right there. Another one I think that Mr. Zimmerman and I saw, that is, that number is 200% increase. Is that, again, because things have been combined?
This warranties have expired on these major systems, and we're now paying for the warranty. We're out of the warranty period.
We have an itemized list that I'm happy to provide to you of everything.
I can be part of that IT review.
Yes.
That represents, by the way, that $5 million represents, we've had in the last year many, many new systems implemented. In the first year, you are under warranty and pay nothing for the maintenance of the system. At the end of that warranty year, you begin paying. There are 36 new systems and support elements that have been laid in. Seven of the major ones are responsible for most of that increase. Things like, just as Chuck has said, Maximo and Trapeze. So the good news is when you have no, the bad news is when you have no support software, it doesn't cost you anything when you put these systems in, the maintenance increases.
Yes, and that is one of the issues of all systems. Generally, we just look at the direct capital cost of putting the system in, but long range, we need to look at the overall cost of when those warranties expire or when there's maintenance necessary, not just on IT systems, but other systems that we have in the agency.
You raise an interesting point. That is one of the things that used to happen, I guess happens sometimes, but I'm not sure it happens regularly, is when we're asked to approve a capital expenditure, we just always do it, an estimate of what that would do to the operating budget. Regular routine basis, and is that what the board would like to do?
It's something we've done in the past. The current capital budget is primarily focused on state of good repair. The only additional operating costs are going to come from running the extra rail cars and to the extent we expand the bus fleet. But the bulk of Metro Matters, the IRP portion, is for just routine maintenance. As we move to the next CIP, we're going to be talking about having expansionary type of projects, and they would absolutely have to have operating cost impacts.
And we will put the operating costs in those. That's a discussion we've had, and I know I've heard since I've arrived here that we provide the capital cost, but there's no operating cost to maintain the equipment. Example, cameras and other things in our buses. When we came to the board for that approval, we came for the capital cost approval, but we did not communicate that in future years this is what the operating impact would be, and we will do that.
Okay, the next item here, somewhat similar that we've discussed for IT, but in bus maintenance, $2 million, contracts for the voice enunciator, fire suppression, and brake bonding. And very similar warranties. We've replaced 430-ish buses in the last 18 months. Many of the older buses didn't have some of these systems. We're out of the warranty period, so this money now is money that we need to have in the budget for maintenance of these systems.
Any questions?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Well, relating to spending, but not quite on this.
Go ahead. I want one related to this, but go ahead.
Later or something?
Well, something is,
That's later. Right there, right now.
Well, I thought we were at the end of this. Well, let me ask it anyway. Why not? How much is this papal visit costing the system? Do we have any idea of what all of what we're doing for this visit?
We can put together the cost on it because we know the overtime costs and the extra staff. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we can bring that to you.
Well, could we have that the next time?
Yes.
A complete report on how much this has cost us and any revenue associated with the. Did you see an offsetting revenue?
The revenue would just be in the additional people using the services. There is no funding source for. We've not been offered any. Financial
nothing
support.
From the Archdiocese.
We're probably not rated on their top right now because it's a little bubbly hit, but.
I'd be very interested in knowing just what this is, and how we're absorbing the cost associated with this.
If any. Mr. Orr?
Yes, we could have buckets at the end of the metro station and collect, but let me ask about our smart cards here. $2 million increase for quantity of smart card transactions. What does that account for?
That's our customer service account. We contract out the customer service for the smart trip. And it's a good story in that it reflects there are now projected to be, 2.9 million smart trip cards out there. The regional operators are now, with one exception, Prince George's, and they'll be up and running very shortly. But so the regional operators are accepting the smart trip cards. We have seen a 4% increase in the use of the cards on the bus since the fare increase, so it's reflecting an overall increase in the use of the cards.
Does regional also mean MTA?
I know we have some type of there's a discussion about similar equipment, and I need to look into the specifics of the MTA in Baltimore and back train.
And then there was a next four discussion or something, I think, at some point, next fare four. But anyway, okay. So, but you're not including them when you say that we are our regional partners have engaged.
I understand there is an issue.
Right, I thought there was.
They had to have a discussion with their CEO last week, and we are in the process of reviewing that. I do not believe there's a negative. I'm getting back to him. There was some discussion that he heard that we were not going to go forward with the program. I think we might have some delays in programs, but I've not gotten that information back yet.
Okay. So, but they're not included in that, when you say regional partners,
not
yet.
Or not.
Okay. That was a question. Well, that is a good news story. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Jane Cullen.
On the $2.5 million for the IT telephone contract, you indicate it's offset by a decrease in utilities. I thought I heard you earlier say utility costs are going up. So is this just overestimated in the budget?
It's just a account.
It's a recategorization.
Yeah, it was moved out of the utility account. It was moved to Ms. Peck's budget.
So you just transferred it over?
Yes, sir. Just an account, and that's our phone bill. That's our landline phone bill.
And if I could also mention, the $2 million increase for specialized IT consulting services is in exactly that category. There is an offset from another account. It was in a different place. It is not an increase. It is simply an offset.
And the last question, I think Mr. Benjamin has clarified, this isn't quite on target, so we will go back and rework this to answer the specific question, bring it back next time.
Inventory write-off. Just note that P&T in general is up 31%. Part of that may be recategorization, but that's a very, very large increase in this category. And I noted, for instance, that one of the things it says here is $1 million increase for external auditors. But we just approved an action for external auditors, which said the budget was $300,000 and the actual was less than that. So I'm trying to figure out what are the other services.
That is a budget reduction that's coming.
So their budget reduction.
Yes. As I mentioned when we started this off, I have taken a look at this budget and said we are going to make reductions. And to which account, we haven't determined that yet, but we are going to reduce this budget. That one's on the list.
So, but that overall 31% increase seems very, very large. Yes, Ms. Evans.
I just wanted to ask for the response to a question that was asked at the last meeting, and it was on the subsidy change between 08 and 09. And I think you raised the question as to why did Fairfax absorb all of the Virginia change, and you were going to get back to.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. At the beginning of this, we stated we'll have that for the May meeting. It was something I haven't been able to get to yet, but I know it's on the to-do list.
Thank you. Mr. Benjamin? Well, let me somewhat untraditionally ask a question of you, which is that because many of these questions, I assume, originated with you. I mean, are you satisfied? Which responses are you not satisfied with in the sense that you would have further questions about? What are your, after hearing this, what are your concerns?
I think my concerns are less important than everybody's concerns. Right. But I would just note again, this is a process. It's a very important process. It's carrying out our fiduciary responsibility. And we are, you know, the largest numbers we talked about here are minuscule compared to a budget that's $1.2 billion. We're talking about small numbers. But we're asking for our riders, and we're asking for our local governments to pay for each one of those dollars that isn't saved. So it's very important for us to look at those. I think a number of these we've raised questions about. We've asked for additional information. For example, the third-party claims, very sharp increase on words and answers.
What about
and
staff?
And staff is another area.
What is the staff issue for you at this point? You can just take a moment to say that. There's an FY07 actual.
There are a number of costs that go up rather substantially, which do not seem to match what would be salary increases. And those would appear to be increases in staffing. And we don't know at this point because we haven't been given that information where those staffing increases are, so we have no way to judge whether that's something that we as jurisdictions and as riders should be paying.
careful to say there appear to be increases in staffing. I would rather we say we would like more details as to what they are.
Do you have a response?
Yes, and in fact, I did say on a couple of occasions we were bringing back the actual breakdown on the staffing. And as I said, they were, off the top of my head, I recall we're going to have 25 police officers, 23 supervisors in the bus operations, drivers, mechanics. I believe there's one person in finance.
I have the detail. We will bring all of that back. And the amount of dollars is $11 million, not including the discussion we had on the police department.
It's $11 million total?
Yes. Not including the officers, which is an additional $2.3 million. So it's be around $13.3 million.
Total?
Yes.
Is proposed?
Yes.
My comment was we'll come back to you with an answer to the question that you just asked. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. One more, the financials.
This is the monthly financial report for February. It's impossible to see on the screen. We've got to get this thing fixed. Based on a discussion that happened last month at this committee, we have identified $36.2 million of passenger and parking revenue that will be set aside from the financial statements and held in reserve to be used as revenue in the 09 budget. What this table shows, even though you can't read it on the screen, is by month and by account what that revenue is. As requested, we've restated the January financials. And we've now included the February financials, so this revenue has been excluded. Another restatement or revision that we made is we've now categorized parking as a type of customer revenue and excluded it from the non-passenger revenues. Just as an ease of understanding where the revenue sources are, whether they're from customer or from business operations, has no effect on total revenues. So those are kind of highlights of what we've done in the financial statements. Flip through two pages for me, Janice.
How much are we running over budget in terms of revenues related to the repair and maintenance?
What we're doing is setting aside the amount of revenue for the fare increase as we estimated. So the fare increase is exactly on budget.
So our estimates are proving to be accurate.
Yes, sir.
And so it's neither above or below that.
Correct.
And just this chart here on the table, this is, I see that you restated January, but this is February actuals.
This chart represents the amount of revenue that's actually being collected in real life today, but we're not recording in the financial statements. So this is revenue the customers are paying us because the fare increase has happened, and we're bundling up this $36.2 million, and budgetarily we're going to set it aside and treat it as a revenue in the 09 budget.
Why was January lower than February?
It was less than a full month. The fare increase happened a week in.
How does it explain the delta in the parking revenue? I guess I'm wondering, are we going to really see these numbers, or are we going to be anticipated coming in a little bit less based on the January?
Now from the discussion last month, what we said was the first dollar of revenue that comes in will populate this reserve, so that the fare increase itself will be held harmless because that's needed to balance next year's budget. And that's basically what this is. This is the reserve. And every month we'll fill it up with these dollar amounts.
Well, but this is great. I don't think maybe I'm confused, but this table on page 57 is not actuals, except in the sense this is what you're taking out.
Correct. This is what we will take out of the actuals,
right,
and set aside for next year.
You have it whatever you wanted.
You know, correct.
You have it whatever you wanted, so that's why it's so accurate.
Right, and my understanding.
But how does it compare? How does. I'm asking a different question, surely you know. You recognize that comparing January, February, maybe March, if you have March, this year to what we produced last year, and how much of that is that increase is a factor of the bear increase.
It is actually
real dollars.
It is impossible mathematically to tell you how much revenue is coming from the fare increase. What we can tell you is how much total revenue is coming. We can tell you what changes is happening in customer behavior. The discussion last month at this committee was, in order to protect the 09 budget, which had an assumption of $36.2 million in revenue, we staff were instructed to set aside the first dollar of revenues collected into this reserve account.
But let me ask the question differently. By taking this out and putting it accounting for it separately, have you reduced the revenues in January, February, March for 08 as compared to 07? Do we end up with less of a revenue in 08 than we do in 07?
Back up one, Jess. You can't see it on the screen, but in your books you can see, I think, the answer to your question. I'll use the highlighter even though you can't see it on the screen. At the top, that number right there is the actual revenue that is being collected by the authority. So we've collected $55.8 million in actual revenue this month in February. We've set aside $6.2 million of that to be used as a revenue source next year, which leaves actual net revenues of $49.6
million
against a budget of $49.1 million. So we had $600,000 of more revenue than the budget assumed actually collected this year after setting aside money for fare increase.
That's what I'm looking for. So in other words, there's a $600,000 in excess of the budget amount in revenue for February. What about January?
January would be the mathematical difference between February and year-to-date. On a year-to-date basis, it's actually the opposite situation. We're $400,000 below budget on our revenues.
Well, year-to-date would be back to July 1.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're correct. If I flip back to page 67, this is the restatement of January. So on the left-hand side of page 67, again, I'll point to it on the screen when we get there, but on the left-hand side of page 67, over here, you can see actual collected for the month against budget collected for the month, and what we've done is deduct from the actuals the amount of the fare increase. So these are actuals that would have occurred had there been no fare increase.
Do we end up with exactly on budget?
Exactly on budget for the month of January.
Okay, but if you continue with your current success here, you're going to end up with, before June 30th, you're going to end up with something on the order of several million dollars of fare increase revenue. I mean, a fare revenue surplus.
Remains to be seen. That's one of the analyses that we owe you in the May time frame, is to try and figure out what's going on underneath the fare increase. January and February were fairly good months. February, I honestly believe, was an anomaly because we had pretty good weather for the Washington area. We had no snowstorms, no ice storms to speak of, and we actually had one extra weekday because of the leap year. 29th was a weekday. The preliminary numbers we're seeing for March are not as favorable as January, February, so I got two good months, one bad month, and it's difficult to kind of project that out to year end, but that's what we owe you for the next meeting, is an assessment of that question.
At this point, what you're telling us is that we're getting about 6% more ridership through February, which is the last month for which we have final numbers.
Right,
and rail than what we did last year. So in spite of the fare increase, we're still getting more riders.
Correct.
Substantially more riders.
Yes, sir, that's absolutely correct. And actually, those are the highlights of the monthly report. If there were other questions, I'd be happy.
I do have a question. I think you may have answered it, and it may be the recategorization. When I looked at this, I saw that the rail ridership was 5% above budget. But the rail revenue was only 1% above budget. Which left me with a question of where did the other 4% go?
What we're seeing is that in the revenue calculation, it's ridership times the fares collected, and the average fare is coming in below below where I would have thought, and that's where the revenue's going.
Well, I understand that. That would be the obvious reason, but that would only argue that for some reason long trips are not being taken on rail. Those are going down compared to short trips.
It would argue that the budget assumptions were too optimistic. The original FY08 budget assumptions, the original 08 average fare budget assumption, probably too high by a penny or two.
So you don't think that this is reflecting a difference in who's taking trips?
No, I don't. We haven't seen any of the pattern change yet. And actually, through the first 6 months of the year, as Vicki and I were looking at it, you kind of decompile average fare versus ridership. It was going on before the fare increase, too.
So are you saying that the same thing happened on bus?
Bus is hitting fairly close to on budget, plus or minus 1%. 1 month it's up, 1 month it's down.
Well, just for the month, it was on budget on ridership, but passenger revenues were 6% above budget.
There's, on a month-by-month basis, there's a lot of variability. I mean, we try to show that in some of the price-volume analysis later in the report.
It seems to bounce up and down quite a bit.
It absolutely does on any month.
Which tends to argue against having an average fare number that was wrong. Because then you wouldn't get that much variability, get it all on the same side. Just wondering what's going on in our system. What are we doing to our riders? One of the things we did was a fare increase that really affected the long-distance riders. Did not affect the short-distance riders very much. Did not affect the bus riders very much. Is that somehow being reflected here, or is there something else going on?
Haven't really seen any impact yet.
Sounds good.
And I think what staff is asking for is to collect one more month of actuals, and it may come back to you with is our best guess about what's going on with underlying behavior changes.
We'll also look at metro access at the same time, because there's
absolutely
a big difference between ridership increases and revenues that are doing the same thing. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I have an interest in that point as well in terms of long-distance riders. What impact is the parking? I think you can also see that in our parking collection. What's going on with the parking collection?
We've noticed no measurable change in parking collection. The lots are as full as they ever were.
And again, I think we need more time to gather all the information, because when you look at it this quickly and we've not really done a full analysis, you can paint a picture that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's
whatever
we bring to you, we want to.
Sure. Sure. And I think that's what I'm asking, that we examine that. It's information that would be helpful for us to know. And if you could kind of
in the
focus on that trend.
Agendas, this is actually one of the information items we owe you a month from now.
Anything else on the budget review?
Rail operating financials, February 08, show an actual that exceeds the actual budget amount. There's a significant dollar amount, even though it is eventually.
Where are you?
As I said, page 68.
I'm on page 68, but where?
Look at the expenses, salary, wages, and overtime.
Okay.
I'm just kind of curious, is that a trend you're going to see in overtime? Salary wages, that real? I mean, is that was that just a blip, or was that's a high dollar value, and that continues throughout the year?
It probably will continue throughout the year, and if you flip the page, you see the inverse going on. These reports don't target any one department, so it's not like I'm reporting on the Department of Rail Service. This is allocated cost to the mode, and what we're seeing here is that as charges come through the systems, as expenses come through the systems, there's more allocation to rail than bus. And on a total budget, it's coming in within about 1%, but I'm seeing modal variances. This is cost accounting. It's difficult to translate this into what's actually happening in the fields and shops. And we do this only for the purposes of subsidy allocation, because we have to set your billings up based on a modal basis.
Cut the billings up.
Billing would be up for rail and down for bus.
You're saying that may or may not reflect actual rail service.
and say that this would be caused by any change in actual employee behavior on the railroad.
And you don't know whether this is offset by any revenues?
No, because
one of the things that happens is sometimes we have increases in overtime, but it's offset by increases in revenues, either passenger or other.
We have to start looking at kind of a departmental budget review to figure out what overtime happens in rail transportation versus what might be happening in rail passenger revenue. Just on a highlight basis, kind of jumping around the capital program. It wasn't intended to focus on a problem area. So I'll get to that.
Capital.